This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. I'll be reading from the Quarterly Journal of the Wisconsin Society for Ornithology called The Passenger Pigeon. This piece was written in 1988. It's as if no time at all has passed. It is so relevant to our lives today. In 1988, they were just introducing and starting a series of essays on past Wisconsin ornithologists. Our first is John Muir. I thank the WSO for permission to read from the Passenger Pigeon, and I recommend you look at their website, wsobirds.org. And if you love birds, you will love these people and what they do. Lots of field trips and events, excellent publications, an annual conference, and lots more. I've previously mentioned Mike Mossman, our author. You may remember Mike was afield with Eric, conducting long, hot days of surveys in a remote area, and when they finally had a good restaurant meal, tiny critters attacked en masse, just as their pizza was nearing their table. That would be podcast episode 5. So I will start with Mike Mossman and Sumner Madison's introduction and continue with Mike's essay on John Muir's boyhood in Wisconsin, near Portage in Marquette County. This is from Volume 50, Number 3, Summer of 1988, Passenger Pigeon. Today's world changes quickly, encouraging our preoccupation with the steady outpouring of new information and new technology. But change does not antiquate the past. Rather, it makes a careful look backward all the more vital, if only to remind us that past decisions have shaped the present as surely as our own acts will affect the future. Historical perspectives are as important to bird study and conservation as they are to other endeavors. A perspective on the past encourages wise land stewardship and provides a foundation for practical work on resource management problems. For example, endangered species management is often guided by historical information on the nature and causes of a species' decline, and recovery goals are suggested by former population levels. In a less practical but equally important sense, historical perspectives deepen our understanding of, and therefore our pleasure in, Wisconsin's wildlife and landscapes. We hope this series of articles will foster such an understanding through a review of the actual words and experiences of former Wisconsin explorers, naturalists, hunters, and conservationists. Facts and figures will not be emphasized. We feel that an eyewitness account of Wisconsin's great passenger pigeon flocks is a history lesson just as valuable as knowing the numbers of birds or the date at which the species was lost. What's more, an appreciation of today's bird conservation laws and public attitudes is incomplete without some feeling for the controversies and occurrences of the late 19th century, without seeing the wasted life in the photos of market gunning, or sensing the fervor in editorials by the blossoming protectionist movement. It is enlightening to read the words of a young egg collector a century ago and sense the same excitement and joy that many of us find in today's non-consumptive pursuits of birdwatching, photography, or research. Another purpose of this series is to demonstrate the lasting value of recording field observations. By caring enough to write about our own observations and experiences, we provide future generations a window into our world, as the ornithologists past have done for us. And there's some short acknowledgments here that I'd like to read. We thank John Bielefeld, Ken Lange, and Sam Robbins for their suggestions regarding this series and for their comments on this in the following paper. In the following paper is John Muir, Reveling in the Wisconsin Frontier, by Mike Mossman. John Muir, born in 1838 and died in 1914, was the foremost champion of American wilderness, and his influence on conservation has been inestimable. This year is the 150th anniversary of his birth, an appropriate time to commemorate this wildest of all American naturalists, particularly in Wisconsin, where many of his formative years were spent. Although Muir is perhaps most often remembered for his role in protecting California wilderness and initiating the National Park System and the Sierra Club, his legacy also includes a collection of writings that relate colorful experiences, keen skills of observation, and a philosophy that remains as important today as it was a century ago. Some of Muir's most fascinating writing is found in The Story of My Boyhood and Youth, originally issued in 1913 and republished in 1965 by the University of Wisconsin Press, completed by Muir at the age of 72, just 4 years before his death. It chronicles the evolution of his indomitable commitment to wildness as it developed from a childlike love of nature, an ancient inherited belligerence, a Scottish culture that prepared boys for battle, and a tyrannical father. In 1849, at the age of 11, Muir emigrated from Scotland with his family. Full of anticipation from the accounts of Wilson, Audubon, and others of a new world where there would be, quote, no more grammar, but boundless woods full of mysterious good things, trees full of sugar growing in ground full of gold, hawks, eagles, passenger pigeons filling the sky, millions of birds' nests, and no gamekeepers to stop us in all the wild, happy land, unquote. They settled among the virgin savanna-like oak openings of Marquette County, 4 to 5 miles from the nearest neighbor, beside what Muir's father called Fountain Lake, now Ennis Lake. They later moved to a second tract, 6 miles to the southeast, and established their Hickory Hill Farm, which still stands today. From the age of 11 until he left for the University of Wisconsin at the age of 22, John was kept busy cutting and grubbing out oaks and working the land to produce wheat, corn, and potatoes. But he also stole time to develop ingenious inventions and to observe and revel in that glorious Wisconsin wilderness around him. It is his vivid account of that wilderness in The Story of My Boyhood and Youth that holds special interest in Wisconsin, for it is one of the best descriptions of southern Wisconsin at the time when the oak openings were rapidly giving way to settlement. Except for a few minor inaccuracies, such as the story of a copperhead snake, probably a fox snake, and of pasc flowers that grew to a height of 2 to 3 feet, Muir's reminiscences are consistent with current knowledge of Wisconsin landscapes and wildlife in the 1850s. Apparently, Muir did not wander far from home during this period. The most distant places he mentions visiting are Portage, Lake Puckaway, and Kingston, all within 12 miles of either Fountain Lake or Hickory Hill. But at that time, even so small an area embraced a wildness and richness that today seems priceless. The area between Kingston and Fountain Lake was, quote, trackless carex swamps and low rolling hills sparsely dotted with round-headed oaks, the wild rice marshes along the Fox River and around Puckaway Lake were the summer homes of millions of ducks, and in the Indian summer when the rice was ripe, they grew very fat, often as many as a half a dozen mallards were killed in a shot. This landscape changed rapidly during Muir's youth, for within, quote, 3 to 4 years, almost every quarter section of government land was taken up, and in a very short time, the new country began to look like an old one, unquote. As the land came under cultivation, prairie fires ceased. And I will stop now, and next week I will continue and finish Mike Mossman's essay about John Muir in Wisconsin in Marquette County in the 1850s. This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. Thank you for listening.